In the past, we've had this panel, and this is a time when we talk about what I sometimes affectionately call "Show Me the Money," or we talk about the issues that we're facing on the regulatory side and what we've got the challenges that we continue to be faced with when we talk about digital television and some of the issues that we have been talking about around the fringes when we talked about MSO cable yesterday and we talked about some other issues. So now we have an opportunity to get two very critical updates. One update is going to come from our friends at APPS and being represented by Marilyn Warren Gillis. And then we've got Bill Cooperman who's going to tell us about PTFP funding as we approach the future. And then at the conclusion of those two presentations, the rest of us will take questions. And I know there are lots of questions because some of them were asked yesterday. And I don't know that we got to all the answers, or I think maybe we even said hold off because there's going to be more information today. So without going in any further in my opening remarks, let me turn this over to Marilyn Warren Gillis, who doesn't need any introduction. She has been in front of this group many, many times, and she's going to provide you with an update.
Thank you, Ed, Ralph, and all of you for inviting me again. This is my favorite conference. I really enjoy being here. On the plane out here this morning, I sat next to a CEO of a technology company, and we got into a wonderful discussion. And then I said, "What's your background? What did you know, what's your training?" And he said, "I'm an engineer." And I said, "Yes, I knew it, because I really like the guy." So when I reflected on what I wanted to talk to you today about, you know, policy, legislative, regulatory, big picture stuff, there's a lot going on right now in Washington. And I really had a hard time trying to figure out where to focus my remarks. I could start with our significant legislative accomplishments from last year. I could talk about the new legislative environment in Washington, D.C. and the challenges that we face there. I could talk about the specific challenges that we now face with the president's new budget. There's some very difficult things in there for public television. I could talk about the legislative case that we're asking all of you, your CEOs and your station managers to present to Capitol, to members of Congress. And in fact, they were in Washington just a few weeks ago, Capitol Hill Day, and this is what we asked them to tell their members of Congress. But I've decided to focus my remarks on the complex funding, regulatory, policy, and legislative issues surrounding one of your favorite topics and mine, digital television. I'm sure that already at this conference you've heard a variety of different perspectives on the digital transition from a variety of players. I know Gary Shapiro was here yesterday, or was it this morning, Ed? Yesterday. However we characterize this transition, and I've heard a lot of characterizations, in deep trouble, stalled, at an impasse, broken, fragmented. I even heard one, Roy Stewart, made a presentation to the commissioners on Thursday. He's the chief of the Mass Media Bureau. And he said, "Going better than most people think." But whatever your perspective, right, the bottom line is that the transition is not on track to achieve the federal government's overarching goal, a speedy transition that will allow it to recover the analog spectrum to auction it off for 3G and other innovative uses. There is no question that we face daunting challenges in making this transition happen. And what I'd like to do is to just sort of run through those. I know you all probably know them very well, but sort of put them all together. I don't know, am I too close to this? Okay, good. And then talk about sort of a big picture approach, and then what we're doing in a more focused way in terms of public television. On the funding front, we have been largely unsuccessful in securing any significant federal support for our conversion since we initially started asking the federal government in 1997. While a portion of the PTFP grants have been allocated for digital television, and I'm going to pause here, and Bill is going to be telling you a lot more about that in more detail, and we are very, very grateful to Bill and NTIA for the wonderful job that they are doing in administering PTFP grants. The bottom line is that the funding levels in PTFP are nowhere near sufficient to meet our needs for the digital transition. On the technical front, as you know, and as I understand Lid Claudia is going to be dealing with right after this session, the viability of the 8 VSB modulation scheme has been called into question over the last year. And while that standard was recently reaffirmed by the FCC after the joint broadcast industry test that Lynn's going to be talking about, it's still clear that receiver performance is disappointing. The interoperability issues between cable boxes and digital receivers are still unresolved. There is still lack of agreement on copy protection, and the vast majority of the so-called digital television sets are digital display devices that cannot receive digital signals. The bottom line is that as of today, 3.5 years after the digital standard has been adopted, we do not have mass production of reasonably priced digital receivers that can actually receive a digital signal, that can perform reliably and adequately, and that can talk to cable boxes. And this is the dilemma that is facing all of us and the policymakers in Washington. On the policy front, cable carriage of digital signals is in jeopardy. In January, the FCC dealt two blows to cable carriage. First, it determined that cable operators are required to carry only one multicast digital program stream in a digital-only channel. In other words, what this means is that when you finally replace your analog signal with your digital signal at the end of the transition, the cable operator will be required to carry only one multicast program stream. Now think about what this does to all of the digital service plans that you all have been working on your stations. It has serious implications and really undermines those plans which are the basis for our federal funding requests, your state funding requests, your capital campaigns. Second, the FCC made a tentative determination, that during the transition, the cable operators do not have to carry the broadcaster's digital signal along with the analog signal. The FCC decided that this was unconstitutional. The simple reality is that the transition cannot succeed as the policymakers wish it to succeed, and that is quickly, speedily returning the analog spectrum, cannot succeed without cable carriage. You all know this better than I. Cable penetration is now at 70% of U.S. households. Cable will be the technology that is going to be the technology providing digital signals to U.S. households more quickly than any other. Cable predicts that by 2006, they will have 42% digital subscribers. Now, the hopeful news is that this is not a closed issue. The FCC did only make a tentative decision. It asked for further information, particularly on issues like cable capacity for carriage of the digital signals. And the decision was rendered by a 3-2 commission. And by the time this comes back around to the commission for further consideration, there will only be one of those commissioners left on the commission. The rest of the four commissioners will be new. So we do have another bite at this apple. APTS, along with PBS and CPB, are putting forward aggressive cases on both the primary video issue, the one multicast channel issue, and the carriage of the digital signal during the transition issue. And we are already laying the groundwork for a possible legislative solution on the Hill. But we need to be realistic. We face serious uphill battles to get digital carriage during the transition from the FCC. And that's the reason why APTS and PBS established a joint board committee to direct negotiations with cable MSOs. You've all heard, I hope, about the success that we've had with the Time Warner negotiations. We have an agreement in place, and I would presume that some of you are involved in dealing with the Time Warner engineers at your stations to make it actually happen, to get those digital signals through the cable systems and into cable subscribers' homes. We are making efforts to negotiate with the remaining MSOs using that Time Warner agreement as the model, as the basis. Not an easy task. We are currently in discussions with AT&T and Cox, and I think it's fair to say that that this is not going to be an easy task as well, but we are really moving on parallel tracks, on an aggressive regulatory track, on laying the foundation for a Hill strategy, as well as pursuing these voluntary negotiations. And I should say, Ed is one of the negotiators and has been doing a terrific job with this process. Another challenge associated with the digital transition are the series of deadlines that have been put in place by both Congress and the FCC. Now, I look at these deadlines as huge elephants under the rug. I don't know if you've ever heard that phrase, but if you can imagine people sitting around a living room talking and there's this big elephant under the rug and no one is talking about it. It's there, everyone knows it's there, but it's something that we can't talk about. So people close to the digital transition know and have known for years that these deadlines are unrealistic and completely disconnected to marketplace realities. But up until just recently, it has been politically incorrect to acknowledge it. I'm pleased to report that the absurdity of the 2006 target date for the give back of the analog spectrum is now out from under the rug. It was publicly and unequivocally declared unachievable by three economists who testified just last month before a Senate hearing on digital television. But the construction deadlines of 2002 and 2003, the commercial deadline and our deadline, are still on the FCC's books. And broadcasters have not, to date, in a very public or formal way, acknowledged that those deadlines are unachievable. It is simply not feasible for broadcasters to meet these deadlines. And I think what we need to do is we need to acknowledge this in a formal way, in a public way, and then we need to come back and put together a plan that is one that is tied to marketplace realities and that can move forward and give policymakers some something to work with on this front. I think the digital transition is also further complicated by the process that's in place, or perhaps I should say lack of process that is in place for handling the range of issues that are involved. The issues are seriously fragmented by a division of responsibility between Congress and the FCC, and further fragmented because they're being handled at the FCC in a variety of different proceedings, in a variety of different bureaus, with what appears to be not sufficiently consistent coordination. The FCC currently has launched at least 8 different proceedings that deal with different aspects of the digital transition. Just a sample here up on the screen. And they're being dealt with across a variety of bureaus. Finally, much as we would like, broadcasters cannot make this happen alone. While we have perhaps the most at stake, we are absolutely dependent upon other essential digital players, particularly the receiver manufacturers and the cable operators. So these are some of the challenges. So what is the solution? As I said, I think we need a big picture solution, one that involves setting a blueprint for addressing the whole set of digital issues together, not in the different and distinct ways in which they are being done right now, in a way that is realistic, integrated, and coherent. The plan has to acknowledge and has to acknowledge the realities that are out there in the marketplace right now. In other words, we need to be frank about what's going on. We need to get the elephants out from under the rug. The plan needs to establish a coordinated approach to digital policy within the FCC, perhaps establishing a digital group that is headed perhaps by the Mass Media Bureau that will coordinate all of the disparate efforts that are going on right now. And then this group needs to coordinate with Congress by reporting to Congress in a very coordinated way the kinds of legislative efforts that are required. And one that establishes a mechanism, and this may again be either through policymakers on the Hill or the FCC, that brings the players together, sets clear goals, encourages the collaboration, but provides for limited government intervention where collaboration or marketplace forces fail to achieve the goals. I think in the recent hearings that we had on digital, there was a common theme that was heard where the players were saying to the members of Congress, you need to help us come together and force us to talk and provide us with incentives to work together and then hold out that stick of potential FCC action or congressional action if we can't make it work out. Now, PTV can support this kind of big picture, this sort of big picture attempt to get our hands around this problem. But we obviously can't make it happen alone. What can we do? What can we do to approach the challenges that we face in this digital transition? I submit that we can do a lot, and we are already moving forward on funding, policy, and on the regulatory fronts to make it happen. PBS just developed revised estimates for the overall cost of the digital transition. The revised estimates, which include television and radio, transmitters, translators, and production, is a whopping $1.8 billion. These estimates provided us, on a policy level, with the foundation for developing our request going forward for federal funding. At a 48% federal matching level, we need $699 million in federal funding. Now, given that in the last 4 years, that we've been seeking federal funding, we have, for a variety of reasons, some out of our control, we have failed to make a case that convinces Congress to give us any significant funds. We recently convened the Legislative Advisory Group in Washington, which is a group of CEOs who advise the APTS board on policy matters. And we presented the question, how can we make a stronger case for federal digital funding? I think it's fair to say that they really saw the challenges that I just ran through with you, and they feel their backs up against the wall. And they responded with what I think is really a landmark public television recommendation, and that is that every station every public television station in the country would agree to dedicate at least one multicast digital channel for formal educational services. Now, and by formal, I mean K through 12, adult education, post-secondary, a formal educational service. Now, APTS's new CEO, John Lawson, took that recommendation and proposed modifying it a bit, changing it to a dedication of 4.5 megabits per second digital capacity to the delivery of formal educational services. That would be the equivalent of three T1 lines downstream to schools throughout this country. And the goal would be delivering these formal educational principally to the schools throughout the country. And we did some conservative estimates. On just a downstream basis alone, this would be valued roughly at about $2.4 billion of service to the schools. This capacity could be allocated on a dynamic basis, with much of the content refreshed overnight and stored on servers at the school so it can be utilized in a modified interactive way by the students. And the content would be developed in partnership with the schools. In exchange for dedicating this capacity, we would ask for federal funding for the digital transition and ask for carriage of our full digital signals during the transition and beyond. This proposal was ratified by the APTS board, presented to our stations at Capitol Hill Day just this month, and we're now in the process of meeting with members of Congress to lay out this idea and to get their reaction and to try to develop this into an authorization proposal for federal funding going forward. This proposal is still very much in the conceptual stage, but we are very excited about refining it and working towards the implementation of this. Let me close by providing you with a quick list of some of the other regulatory and policy issues that we're working on with the FCC, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have about that. And then finally, I would like to just thank our engineering advisory group APTS. This group of engineers has provided wonderful support for our regulatory and policy issues, most recently helping us sort out the myriad of technical issues in the Commission's recent must-carry and biennial review decisions. And we are most grateful for the service that they provide. I would be happy to answer any questions that you might have. I don't know if you want to do that now or if you want to...
We're going to hold questions until the end, until after Bill's presentation. Thank you very much. There were moments when I was listening to Marilyn where the word bummer came to mind. And there were times when I got excited that again, public television will find creative ways to potentially build a strong value proposition. We'll be able to get the kinds of funds that we need to make this transition. And that's what this is all about, value for the American public. And we've been talking about that for almost 2 days. In order to give us an update on a fund of money, which has been extremely important to many of you out there, we've asked Bill Cooperman, who's been with the PTFP organization since 1984, to join us as the director since 1999. And before joining PTFP, he was the deputy director of West Virginia Educational Broadcasting Authority, so he's well first in public television issues, and Bill is going to provide us an update on what's going on with PTFP and the U.S. Department of Commerce. Bill?
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for inviting me to come this afternoon and talk for a few moments about where we are with PTFP. Marilyn has talked a little bit about how one gets money, the amount of money required in order to fund digital transition. What I'd like to do is talk about what happens after the money is appropriated particularly to the Public Telecommunications Facilities Program in the Department of Commerce. For those of you who are not familiar with us, if you may be a new engineer, we are the primary federal agency available for matching grants to help with converting to digital, but also to maintaining your existing analog service to the 99.9999999, and I won't go on any further than that, viewers who currently are receiving your services. So let me briefly review with you where we are with PTFP. There are a lot of numbers on these slides. Please do not bother writing any of them down, because at the back of the room or outside in the lobby, we have all of the slides available for you to take back with you. So I'm going to run by these very quickly, but just to kind of give you an overview as to what PTFP has been doing and is currently doing for digital television. Last year, we made 103 awards. We had $25.7 million available to award. And of those, about 80%, I think, of the awards, almost $20 million of the $25 million went to television. The remainder, a little over almost $5 million, went to radio, and a very few, about $1.5 million, went to some distance learning projects. So you can see that television certainly does receive the bulk of the funding from PTFP. Obviously, television is a much more expensive medium than radio. The television awards, if we look at those 41 television awards that we made last year, about $15 million were for digital television conversion projects. We were able to fund 25 projects, I think a total of about 38 individual stations would be assisted in converting to digital broadcasting, because some of those projects are by multi-station licensees and were involved in providing assistance to many of the stations within those networks. In addition, we spent about $3.5 million in equipment replacement, but equipment replacement projects that have digital implications, such as replacing a tower that will serve not only continuing the analog service, but also give the station a capacity to put up a new digital antenna. And I mentioned our commitment to maintain existing analog service. We did fund about $1.7 million for those kind of projects, because we know that that is still very critical for your stations to continue their analog services. This year, as Marilyn mentioned, we do have $43.5 million available. That is a $17 million increase provided by the Congress over the prior year. Percentage-wise, that's, you know, a fairly hefty percentage increase, about 60% increase. Certainly well below, unfortunately, what the original request was, both by the President, President Clinton at that time, and by the public broadcasting community. The Congress also includes in the language the direction that we're to maintain a balance between continuing the existing services, and those obviously include radio as well as the analog television, as well as converting to digital broadcasting. Many of you know that about 2 months ago, middle of February, we had the closing for the 2001 grant cycle. We received 251 applications. All of those applications are now listed on our website, in great detail. We have descriptions of each of those applications and the individual stations that a multi-station organization has requested funds for. We also published a notice in Friday's Federal Register, but if you go to our website, I think starting Monday, certainly by Tuesday, you will find a list of all of the applications that were submitted to the program. The 251 applications requested $123 million in fiscal 2001 funding, but because for digital conversion, we did permit the stations to come in for multi-year projects, the total requests over the multi-year period is $168 million. 139 of those applications were for television. And as you can see, about 108 of the $123 million were requested by television broadcasters. A little more detail here, about $47 million were requested by single-year applicants and $49 million by multi-year. So it really did split pretty well down the middle as to how individual organizations feel it is best that they approach the digital conversion. We try to be very flexible in what we did for the program starting last year and continuing during the current grant cycle, where stations could provide applications for multi-year, spreading a project over a number of years. We also permitted stations to begin spending their local match, but I must emphasize only their local funds, beginning July 1st of 1999. So purchases that you may have already made with your local funds will be eligible for matching in the future from PTFP. We held that date for the 2001 grant cycle, and it's our expectation that we'll be able to continue that same date for upcoming grant years, but it's not official until it's published in the Federal Register, and I just have to make that disclaimer. There were 113 digital conversion applications this year and 26 applications to replace equipment. Radio, just to, you know, follow through, 96 or 93 applications for $10 million, about $4 million for non-broadcast. And those applications, multi-year projects that were funded last year, and we funded 13 of those last year, we set aside no more than $10 million of the $43 million to continue the second phase of those multi-year applications. So if you take everything together, the $123 million that were requested this year, plus about $13 million in planned second phase applications for those multi-year projects, we really have $136 million in applications pending for fiscal 2000 year funds. That's a slight increase, actually, over, I believe, about $130 million that was requested for the fiscal 2000. So we have a very difficult job to do at PTFP. It's very difficult indeed to try to make the fairest and most equitable decisions that we can for the distribution of the dollars that the Congress has appropriated to us. We start by asking your CEOs, those at least who have not submitted an application to PTFP, to be reviewers. And they review the applications, peer review panels, provide the primary evaluations, the primary scores for the applications that have been submitted to us. Those applications are then reviewed by our engineers. Many of you know Chuck Malone. We receive comments from a national advisory panel of public broadcasting organizations, state telecommunications agencies from those states that do have such organizations. The single point of contact, which is another governmental coordinating organization that many states have. And finally, and very important, the Federal Communications Commission, because even at this date, there are still one-third of the television stations in this country that have not received their construction permits for digital television, 598 by the latest FCC count. 598 out of 1,600 television stations in the country have not received their digital construction permits. And so we coordinate with the commission to make sure that a project can be cleared by the commission before we can commit, you know, significant federal dollars. And this whole process will take probably until sometime in the fall before we actually make awards. In the meantime, we will be processing your applications. For those of you who are the multi-year projects that we funded last year, we'll be contacting you sometime in the early summer, I suspect, and start talking about what a second phase of your project would look like and the funding that we might be able to devote to that. That really wraps up where we are with the fiscal 2001 application process. The question, of course, is what's going to happen next year. I don't know the answer to that. What I can tell you is that in the president's budget request to the Congress in April, he did request a continuation of the $43.5 million for PTFP. That is, at least in absolute dollars, the high watermark for the program, and we'll have to see as a result of the full congressional process what actually is appropriated to the program for facilities. So once we have the facilities, once we have the money available and appropriated, then we would expect to continue this process on an annual basis until digital conversion is complete, whether that's 2003 or whatever date is required. But I can assure you that we at PTFP will take the dollars that are appropriated by the Congress and try to work with the national public broadcasting organizations, the individual stations, and you and your managers to try to make the quickest and the fairest and the most equitable division of the dollars that admittedly are not the kind of dollars that you have been requesting that you need for a full conversion at this point. But we're trying to do what we can with what we have, and we'll continue to do that. And I thank you very much. Oh, one last thing here, by all means, please. The information, how to contact us, if you don't know how to contact us, there, and of course, this is on the information, the printed copies. Please check the website. All of the information about the grant program is available at our website, www.ntiadoc.gov/PTFP. And if you look in the What's New section there at our website, you'll find the list of the 251 applications that we're currently considering for funding. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Bill. So there was some money there. That's good. And it goes for very good purposes. Now, both Bill and Marilyn, unfortunately, have to run to a radio meeting, but I think we have time for a couple of questions. I just want to mention that not only did we have Bill and Marilyn here as subject matter experts on this particular subject, but we also have Doug Weiss, who's the Vice President of Strategic Development from CPB. So your questions do not have to be limited just to apps and to PTFP. It can actually come at both CPB and PBS, because I'm here to answer questions too. So, first question.
This is to Bill. My name is Peter Morrill from Idaho Public Television. Bill, has there been any discussion or long-range strategic thinking at PTFP or U.S. Department of Commerce about ways of granting organizations funds that could allow alternative models other than purchasing of equipment? For instance, I'm thinking of connectivity projects that you don't buy hardware for per se, but instead you have long-term lease arrangements. Some of the projects that we've talked about here just in the last couple of days are regional servers, and you need high capacity connectivity from distant locations, and in those cases you would be obligated to leasing, connectivity. Sure. Services. Thank you.
Very good question, and thanks for bringing that up, Peter. We do fund on a regular basis acquisition by lease, and we have indeed funded connectivity projects where people have come in with a long-term lease for interconnection. We did it in Montana, for example. Two public TV stations there are interconnected by a project where we funded a long-term interconnection between the two. You also talked about or asked about cooperative projects. I should also mention that we're very interested in trying to fund projects that increase the efficiency in public broadcasting. Yesterday there was mention of joint master control in Denver. We did fund that project. We also funded a project for joint master control for the three public TV stations in New York City. And there are other projects of that type that I think we're looking at currently for the current grant round. So if you have those kinds of applications, if it's cheaper to do it by lease rather than purchase, why not do it that way?
Lou Zager has a question here.
This is probably for Marilyn. Did I read recently that the Bush administration in their budget had postponed the 700 megahertz auction until 2004? And if I read that correctly, is that significant in terms of policy?
I believe so, Lou. And I read the same thing, and I had wanted to follow up on that and see what the budget said about that. So I'm sorry that I don't have any more specific information on that point.
Question for Marilyn. Can you update us on satellite must carry? Is that going to go into effect?
At this point, the Satellite Home Viewer Information Act, which was passed in 1999, provides that as of January 1, 2002, any DBS operator who is providing a local-to-local service in a market and using the compulsory license to provide that service must carry all local signals in that market. The FCC promulgated rules. Those rules are very good for us because they have a very broad definition of non-duplication, which is very beneficial to the carriage of multiple public television stations in markets. And they're in place. Now, there are some significant things going on right now that are challenging both the statute and the rules. The satellite operators have brought a lawsuit saying that the statute is unconstitutional. We're fighting that case in the Eastern District of Virginia. The satellite operators have also challenged the FCC's rules, and that challenge is currently in the Fourth Circuit. So that we have these parallel challenges going on. And we anticipate that we will have a decision in the trial this fall, and that will be appealed, and that the goal will be to have all of this worked out prior to the 2002 time frame. So the answer to your question is that right now we have a very favorable statute, very favorable rules, but we are in the process of vigorously defending those, and we do not know how that's going to turn out.
Okay, I'll take one more question here.
This is for Marilyn. Marilyn, have you ran, or has any of the APTS people ran the 4.5 megabit proposal up the flagpole, so to speak, with any people in Congress? And what kind of reception are you getting?
The answer is yes, we have. We had our managers who were in town on Capitol Hill Day socialize that with the members that they spoke with. And our staff has been meeting with members of Congress. I think it is, I think that there is some interest in it, and they want to, and people are receptive to exploring it. We just need to get more feedback about it. I think it's public television is positioning itself in a very proactive way with regard to this digital transition. The message is very clear. If you give us federal support, we will make this capacity available, we will use this technology for educational purposes, and we will be on the forefront of showing how this technology can be beneficial. And so I think that message is being well received. Now, the critical issue is we have to turn it into a hard authorization proposal that then we move forward with.
Hey, one more? Yeah.
Question to the Marilyn. There was a proposal for the TV 32-inch and larger, which must have digital tuners. What is the updated situation?
I'm sorry.
There's a proposal that every television that's 32 inches or
33 inches or greater have digital tuners.
Right.
I mean, I think that's one of those policy issues that I was sort of alluding to, where that is a proposal that is one that the FCC and or Congress, we think, needs to consider. Because right now you have analog television sets that are still being manufactured and sold to consumers that are going to be in consumers' homes for the next, you know, 10 to 15 years that cannot receive digital signals. And so the question here is whether or not there needs to be a requirement that Congress needs to impose or that the FCC needs to impose under the All Channels Receiver Act that would require every television set above a certain size to contain a digital tuner. And we think that this is certainly one thing that Congress or the FCC needs to look at if they want the digital transition to move forward as quickly as they say they do. This is one of those ways in which the government could step in and could really advance the ball and move the transition forward.
I hate to do this, but I did promise both Bill and Marilyn that I'd get them out of here for the radio meeting. Now, I know that Chuck Malone is here, so if there are any additional PTFP questions, I think you can find Chuck around for the rest of the day. There are numbers of folks from CPB, including Doug, that represent the Future Fund, the Transition Fund, so they're around. Look for their badges, and if you have any CPB questions, and as we continue on with the rest of the agenda, any you can ask me or PBS staff any questions that may be lingering on this particular issue. Thank you very much, and we're going to move on to the next panel.